Men, do you ever feel like you just can't get ahead? Like you're misunderstood? Like you have no one to talk to that truly hears you?
And women, are you often frustrated, hurt, and saddened in your relationships with the men in your life?
What if there were a community of like-minded men going through the same challenges that would support, hear, and understand what you're going through?
Working together in unison to create understanding, intimacy, and strong connections. That's the Way of the Illuminated Warrior.
Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show is a forum of candid conversations for men and women about men. Heard every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Being a man today is not always easy. Until now.
Welcome to the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show, where we heal, hold, teach, and talk about men's challenges. And today we are talking about what is your sugar, because we are human and we all have addictions. Let me introduce you to the host of Illuminated Warrior.
He's going to introduce himself with a song. Sugar, honey, honey. Yeah. Do you remember that song? By the way, yes, this is Waska, your host. So, yeah, so that was back from, like, I think the 70s. That's the Archies. But that ever since I'm, like, thinking about this show coming up, that song's been stuck in my head. Do you remember that song?
I do remember that song. Yes, I do.
So that's my right. Sugar for today. I'm, like, addicted to the song. Sugar. Honey, honey, you are my candy girl. All right, let's get serious now. Okay. Yeah, like that might. But anyway, yes, it's great to be here. And the topic of sugar or addictions, I think it's a really good one, because I think we all have them, whether we really recognize it or acknowledge it or not. And this whole topic started years ago. I came up with this challenge for the guys in the Illuminated Warrior Circle. It was really about, like, really taking a look at the way we're living our lives, how our sugar or addictions, or whatever you want to substitute the word with, is affecting our relationships, affecting our lives, how we go about our day. Are we recognizing patterns that are not really healthy for us or the people around us? Are we ignoring them? We had a gathering. I asked them to first identify what their sugar was, you know, sit with that for a bit, maybe journal about it, maybe look at where that might have come from and what their story is, what they're telling them themselves. And before we gathered to see if they were capable on their own through meditation or just whatever focused intention to back off and eliminate that sugar out of their lives from anywhere from 1 to 3 days before we started. And then we gathered and we did 3 days, you know, a little retreat, if you will, weekend without the sugar, and did work around that. So that's kind of how this was born, the whole sugar addiction, like let's get down to it kind of thing. Yeah.
That's a powerful exercise, whether we're talking about literal sugar or whether we're talking about the substitute that people place in there. And I would imagine that the conversation probably begins before one's own addiction, because so often people come from families where they are either carrying forward the same addiction or they're trying to deal with the ramifications of a parental figure or caregiver that had an addiction. And I know that you're a child of an alcoholic. What does that do to affect an individual to be a child of an addict?
Mm. Well, yeah, you said dealing with it or not dealing with it or not acknowledging it, which I believe is really the first step that must be taken. And I know, like, in certain recovery programs like AA, you acknowledge, like, yes, I'm an alcoholic or I'm a whatever it is. So growing up in the alcoholic family, my dad drank from the time he was almost 13 until 6 years before he passed. And the only reason he didn't drink the 6 years prior was because he was in assisted living. They would give, as he called them, the inmates. I'm like, yeah, okay, Dad, you're not an inmate. You're a resident. But anyway, he would allow the inmates like one beer like every Friday night. And he would not do that because he knew if you give me one beer, that's not going to be enough. So I was extremely impressed with his fortitude and his power to stop drinking after, again, like 68 years, and stopped smoking, like cold turkey both, which was really incredible to me that he was able to do that. He did not give up gambling. We were not going to attempt to take that away from him because, you know, hey, you know, God bless him. He was able to give up the drinking and the smoking. So, you know, for me growing up, I went to college and all my friends partied and drank. And, you know, I looked at that. I looked at that at a young age just because, you know, my mom and my dad, they got divorced when I was almost 18. And so I was, you know, learning, okay, this is what an alcoholic relationship is about. You know, you're living it, you're in it. You don't necessarily know that this is any different than what anybody else is going through when you're a young person. So, yeah, I went to Alateen, that's, you know, program for teenagers. And, you know, later on, I checked out like ACOA, which is Adult Children of Alcoholics. Never really resonated with it a lot, but I did get some knowledge and the information surrounding it, what it was all about. You know, they call it a family disease because it affects the whole family. And also, which I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard numerous times that it is hereditary. So I really don't know if that's true or not. I know my sister dealt with, you know, alcohol. I don't want to say addiction, but, you know, she felt like she was pretty much addicted to it. She shared with me. And so I decided to, quote unquote, go on the wagon and see if I, you know, if I was addicted. The first time I remember was early 20s. You know, we used to go to a local pub, me and my boys, my friends. And, you know, these guys were all bigger than me, so they could drink a lot more, handle a lot more. And, you know, but I would do my best to keep up because that's what I did. And I went cold turkey. I'm like, you know, I really don't need this. I was convinced I was not an alcoholic. And it really was not an issue for me at all. You know, I just enjoyed the social camaraderie and the partying aspect of it. But it really was not an issue for me at all to do that. What was really kind of shocking to me, and I think this is something that probably a lot of guys would go through, whether it's alcohol or other addictions, when you're surrounded and your circle is some the people who do the same thing, they don't want you to, I'm not going to say get better, but they don't want you to step outside that circle because intuitively they know this is not a healthy thing. This is not really a good thing for me to be doing to and for myself. So when somebody steps outside the circle and they're getting well or they're, you know, finding a better way, it's very uncomfortable for them. So my friends try to suck me back in. They actually literally were ignoring me because I went to the bar and I'm having, you know, whatever, you know, apple juice or whatever, you know, and they're busting my chops. And at first I'm like, okay, yeah, go ahead. They were not having the conversations with me because I was not on the same playing field, so to speak. So I found that very interesting. So anyway, I went through that a few times and I convinced myself without really much effort that I am not an alcoholic. I could, like, if you told me today, hey, you know, Waska, no more drinking for you for the rest of your life, I'd be like, oh, okay, that kind of sucks because I do enjoy it. I drink in moderation now. But I could go the rest of my life without drinking any alcohol again. So that's the alcoholic part and where my dad came from. So I looked at myself, what is my addiction? You know, and I've often said, I don't have any addictions. I'm not addicted to substances. I'm not addicted to, you know, again, alcohol. I'm not addicted to sex or porn or gambling or any of that stuff. So I've been thinking about it lately. If it even is a sugar or addiction, I would have to say that my sugar or my addiction is like, and which comes from the alcoholic, being in the alcoholic family, that I'm a people pleaser. I always wanted everybody to like me, and you know, I would do whatever I needed to do to really get that acceptance. But I see myself though at times that I still kind of go back to that. So if anything, that may be my sugar.
I want to go back to something that you said earlier about your dad. Because you talked about alcohol, and then you talked about smoking, and then you talked about gambling. And I think that when I look at people with addictions and people who claim to not have addictions, because I think we all would wish we don't, we all have multiple addictions. I do believe that human beings are naturally addictive. I also believe that we're also naturally negative, and that's what we're here to work out of. Do you find in working with the men that if there is one addiction, there's generally multiple addictions?
Well, since we're naturally negative, I'm going to say no, absolutely not. wrong. No. Well, interesting enough, so we did this exercise with the Warriors, and there was a plethora of different addictions or sugars, and I was really proud of the guys that, you know, because we do create a safe and sacred space, and, you know, I'm not going to share anything, even, of course, on this forum, even, I wouldn't use anybody's names or anything that would ever tie back to them, but I'm really proud that they were able to open up and share and go deeper into looking at it, because that's really the first phase, is looking at, you know, what it is that's affecting, you know, health, relationships, communication, and those types of things. So my experience with a lot of the guys that were attracted to the Warrior work, it was alcohol. It is, you know, NA, like our Narcotics Anonymous. It is even like overdoing, like, you know, there's a few guys who just like, do. I'm like, dude, chill, man. Like, do you realize how much you're taking on? Like, how could you, of course you're quote unquote failing. How could you possibly do all of this, be successful or feel like you're being successful at so many things? You already stacked a deck against yourself. And what's the end game anyway? You know, you're just going to add more to the list, and it's like the serpent eating its own tail. It's a vicious cycle. There's no win-win there. But I think it's things that make their lives feel, I'll use the word numbing, kind of numbs out the things that often were triggered when they were young lads. Again, like, I'm not good enough, not smart enough, be seen and not heard. All those things, you know, they sound cliche, but they're very, very true. You know, when you go deep and you hear these stories, this is the stuff that a lot of us have experienced, you know, from our parents and from the environment around us. And it's it needs to be really acknowledged first and worked on to get past it. You know, the guys have worked really hard on the retreats that we've done to look at these things. And you're not going to transform overnight. You're not going to transform from a monthly telecircle. It gives you a roadmap. It sets the groundwork. It gives you tools to be able to do things for yourself and to get out of that rut and to move forward when these things come up. But the real work is we all have to step up and get these tools and start using them and do the work in those in-between spaces where it really is challenging, because you don't necessarily have somebody prodding you. Okay, bro, you know, this is what you need to do. And that is also where the support of the brothers come in. You know, we are there for each other in those in-between spaces when we need each other. It's a beautiful process, but it's not easy.
I think that brings up that addictions can show up a lot of different ways, and some will be those negative types of ones that involve substance or the escapism. But then there are also these types of addictions that are the high, such as ambition or success or, like you said, people pleasing or being a certain way. It creates almost a high in the person. As opposed to the numbing out. So it does seem to be a varying polarity when it comes to our addictions as human beings.
Yeah, we didn't really mention that one, but like work addiction. I mean, that's a wow. Like, how often is that affected not only health and stress, but relationships? It's like, you know, one partner is just like working all the time, you know, got to have more, got to have this, you know, and you know, we all need to work and make money and pay our bills and support ourselves and our families. But again, there's got to be a happy balance there. So that particular sugar or addiction is a huge one also.
Yeah, I believe all addictions are based in a desire to not feel, to not sink into emotions that are being held, suppressed, or to encounter thoughts and feelings that a person wants to avoid.
Like, if you don't want to look in the mirror and somebody's holding the mirror up for you and you're looking in there and you're not liking what you're seeing, it's challenging. And hey, that's not me. I don't want to look at that. You know, F you, you do the work. You know, it's a very challenging thing to, you know, look at that dark side, look at that shadow side and say, you know, I have to do something about this. Like, no, I'm not gonna. So that's why the addictions and the sugars, it's so easy to stay in that circle. You know, that circle of just whatever it is. It may not be healthy, it may be causing stress or whatever else, but it's a lot easier to stay in that circle than to step out of it, or, you know, to go up against the resistance of break through that. You know, but that's what's necessary to, you know, to move forward and to bust out of those sugar addictions.
Well, and sometimes I think that, you know, the addictions are not always accessible intellectually. We may not know why we do the things that we do. And if we can't access the feelings that drive certain behaviors, sometimes it's because it's actually embedded in the physiology, and it is simply the discomfort that one can't deal with. But I do know that if you stay with the sensation long enough, the sensation also will dissolve. But oftentimes people will be so embedded in their behavior or their addiction that it's often more difficult to get rid of that than it would have been just to let the sensation dissolve.
Oh yeah, because that's scary for a lot of us, I think. It's the unknown, and stepping into the unknown is usually pretty scary. It's also it's also in my experience a wonderful place, that you know, liminal space, that liminal time, the place between like here and there and what is and what could be. It's the unknown. So to step into that, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, I'm going to step off the edge. Is there a bottom there? Is it an inch down? Is it 100 feet down? And, you know, and it does really require faith and proactive behavior and diligence and doing the work.
There's an irony and a paradox in what you just said, because it's about that uncertainty and figuring out, is there a bottom there? But rather than stepping into the unknown and the uncertainty and allowing life to catch you with its foundation or its net and realizing that there is a foundation there, instead the addiction still takes you, but it takes you to rock bottom rather than just the bottom. So yep. That's interesting. We have a choice between landing on a foundation at the bottom or hitting rock bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, rock bottom, as hard as it is, you know, pun intended, there's no other way but up from there, you know, because it's rock bottom, you know, to keep free falling without you know, giving yourself the opportunity to hit that rock bottom, you know, just keep clawing at the sides and, you know, okay, well, I took this step, but I'm going to crawl my way back up. It doesn't really serve the healing process. You know, we really do need to trust that we will be supported once we allow ourselves to fully feel, as you were saying, whatever's going on. But, you know, that's it's not something that most of us have been taught or even necessarily trust intuitively. So, and these are patterns that usually have stemmed from childhood, or, you know, just the trauma or relationships going awry, whatever was the trigger for that. And really great book, The Dance of Anger. My role in the alcoholic family, I almost said dysfunctional alcoholic family, but even saying dysfunctional family is redundant. But my role in our family, in the alcoholic family, was to just be quiet and be the good boy and do whatever was needed and smooth it out. And when I started doing my own personal transformational work and, you know, finally got to a place of like, wow, you know, I actually can use my voice. I can say how I feel without fear of, you know, being ridiculed or told to be quiet or like your opinion or feelings are not valid. And, you know, and I started doing that and it started feeling good and empowering. And of course, the others in that triangle, that dysfunctional alcoholic family dynamic, they didn't like it when somebody in that circle sees you moving away and really growing. It's like it's uncomfortable for them, so they want to suck you back in. And that's what the dance of fear is. It's like everybody else fears there's going to be a change in the dynamic. It's a disruption in the force, and they try to suck you back in. And my way out, which was very difficult. I mean, I met a lot of resistance. I met a lot of really uncomfortable and really kind of sad outcome. But I stood my ground. I created healthy boundaries that I would not let be crossed. This is what I need in my life. I hope you could support that. And you know, telling me I have to do this, or, you know, imposing on my personal space like that is not going to be okay with me anymore. And, you know, if you choose to do that, then I'm going to be taking a step back. And that was like, you know, who's saying this? It's like, well, it's me saying it. And I really hope you could, you know, respect and honor my wishes. And, you know, they weren't respected and honored at first. And it literally took years to get to that point. But I felt more empowered. I also felt hurt and saddened that was the response from the other people in, you know, in my family. But, you know, ultimately, they did, you know, see, I believe, because the behaviors did change, that it was, you know, this is okay. We can't change the dynamic, even though it's not comfortable for us and we don't like it. You know, he's doing his thing. He seems to be healthy and happy. So I guess, what the heck, you know, let's stop busting his chops and give him a little love anyway. So that was my experience.
Well, we definitely teach people how to treat us, and sometimes we have to make a sharp contrast for that way we are treated to shift. And I think that sometimes that's also what keeps people in their addictions, is the fear of losing those that are around them. No one wants to lose their family because they made a choice, or, you know, lose relationships. But oftentimes that too is part of the personal and spiritual growth journey, because vibrations cannot remain in the same space. And so if someone is growing and changing and becoming a different person, it only seems natural by laws of energy that family dynamic would move out as the person is rising, and only when they are able to come back into an equal vibrational match would they come back into a place where they can connect again.
Yeah, very true. Something else that I remind the guys and support them in, because again, I'm really proud of a number of them for really doing the work and moving through and past the old stories that kept them down and kept them in dysfunctional relationships and in their addictions. It takes diligence and, unfortunately or fortunately, a continued and renewed effort over and over and over again. Because it's like, hey, Wasco, you know, when do we get to stop, you know, putting this salve on the burn? It's like, well, sorry, dude, the burn is just part of you now. It's a scar, so to speak. And it's a badge of courage, if you will, that you've passed through this. And, you know, the stories of like getting sucked back in. I'm like, stay strong. You got to remember all the work that you did and remember who you are. And, you know, you don't have to go back into feeling small, into feeling you need that sugar to be who you want to be. And that's happened a lot over the years. You know, guys who have done the work. And, you know, a few guys that two guys in particular came back into the fold, came back into our telecircle that I hadn't spoken to in 2 years or so. And I asked the questions. I'm like, you know, why are you feeling this way? Why do you think you've, you know, kind of like taken steps back to be feeling this and in the same situation? And all they do know. They get it. They know. And they know what they need to do. It's like, you know, I say, I got to get my prodding stick out, you know, because if that's what they need and that's what they want from me to get them going again, I'll do that. And the point being, again, it's a continued journey. And remember what it takes to move forward and to be healthy. And it's not always easy. It does take work. It does take, you know, consistency and diligence and not letting yourself fall back into those patterns. And again, I remind the guys a lot of times, sometimes it's necessary to move away or even end relationships that are either toxic, wearing on you, stressful. I call, you know, some of the people I used to have in my life, they're energy vampires, man. They just, you know, they just want to talk about themselves, always asking for things and favors, and like never ask a question like, hey, how are you doing? How you been? What's going on with you? It's always about them and what's going on in their lives and what they need and what they want. And it's just taxing. It's okay to, you know, gently or abruptly push those people out of your lives if that's the kind of effect it's going to have on you, because it's just not healthy for them either. Even for the vampires, I mean, to keep letting them feed off of you or anybody else, it's, you know, that's their sugar. That's not healthy for them either. So you got to step away for your own, you know, your own health and well-being.
Ultimately, any addiction pattern or behavior is a call for balance. And it's like you were speaking of earlier, you know, you have to go cold turkey. You have to go to the complete opposite, to the other extreme, to eventually come into that place of balance. And so if it is people pleasing, then it means going to the complete opposite and really focusing in on what you want. If it's alcohol or drugs or smoking, it's going to the complete opposite and not touching it at all. And if it is work, then it is learning to take a few days every week and do absolutely nothing. So it requires that personal will. It requires that intention, that discipline, that devotion, and ultimately that self-love to be willing to go to the other side and find oneself again.
I think it was the Michael A. Singer. I think it was the Surrender Experiment. I think it was that, though, or maybe the Untethered Soul. I forget which one that he basically does like remote viewing. I don't know if he calls it that, but really like looking at yourself from above. It's really powerful just to look at how you are speaking, the thoughts that are coming into your head, how you're reacting or responding to someone. And yeah, I'm thinking of one bro that he's come really far. His addiction, or one of his addictions, is alcohol. His kids have pleaded with him. I'm not going to say his marriage ended because of that, but I'm sure it certainly had an effect on it because, again, it's a family disease. It has to affect every relationship that you're in. You know, there's a difference between wanting something, desiring something, and needing it. If you need it and you can't go without it, and you're hearing your kids and your partner and maybe your work associates, if other people are telling you it's an issue for them, then, you know, you may want to take a step back and like hover above yourself and look at those interactions. And if you're able to do it from an observer viewpoint, from a objective viewpoint, because that's what it really takes, not defending and not rationalizing, but say, wow, you know, is that really what I'm saying? Is that really what I'm doing? Is that really what I look like when I'm doing it? Is that how I'm talking to people? Is that how I'm pushing people away? And often that is what's happening, the bargaining and all those things that come along with like, well, this is what I do. And if you don't like it, or it's not an addiction, or the denial. I mean, that's a big red flag right there. And asking for help is huge. It's not a sign of weakness. A lot of guys feel like that. Like, hey, I can do this myself. I don't need any help. I'm managing it. I'm dealing with it. You know, and then the rationalizations would be like, well, you know, I'm under a lot of stress at work. You know, I got this budget to meet. I got to keep X amount of, you know, clientele coming in. All the rationalizations that make it okay to keep doing that addiction, that sugar. What's the most important thing in your life? For me, it's like, you know, relationships, and where's that love coming from? How much are you giving of it? You know, not like I need this, I want this, I got to get more of that. You know? And that's part of that whole addictive process. So it is, you know, that remote viewing and taking a look from an objective third party at yourself, if you will, I think is really powerful.
I'm thinking that listeners that might be dealing with a certain type of addiction, particularly male listeners, that it might be helpful to share what a child of an addict is experiencing, what they are feeling, how they are being impacted, how this shifts their experience and expression in the world, or and how it impacts their relationships and interactions going forward. And since you've had that experience, you know, what can you share?
The terminology, the verbiage, the language in itself, guys get so tweaked. Like you say that A word and it's like, I'm not an addict. You know, my father wasn't an addict. You know, it's a button pusher right there for so many guys. And I remember one of my best friends, still my best friend, this is going back. I was in my early 20s and I got pulled over for drunk driving. And hey, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because back then, you know, in the early 80s, man, we were all drinking and driving. And it was like, you know, God forbid I would have hurt somebody else. And that's usually what happens. It's the drunk fool that gets behind the wheel that's, you know, could bounce all over the car and not get hurt, and you wind up hurting somebody else. So I was grateful it happened to me, because that was it. I stopped drinking and driving after that. And I remember my buddy said, you know, yeah, that was them. These are the same guys who, you know, busted my chops when I stopped drinking. And they kept drinking. Listen, bro, you know what? Your father drinks wine every day. He's an alcoholic also. You just don't even know what an alcoholic is. Nah. He's like, first of all, it's out of a box, so it's not even really wine. I'm like, yeah, it's wine, dude. It's got alcohol in it. And he's technically an alcoholic. And he got very – that's another A word, you know, that even, you know, people don't like, the alcoholic, the addict, the addiction. 2 weeks later, his father got pulled over for drunk driving, you know. I'm like, okay, do you see? He's like, no. But anyway, it really, again, comes down to just you know, being vulnerable. And you know, if you are a child of an alcoholic, you know, it behooves you to look at that, because we learn, obviously, different ways. We learn from environmental. We learn from relationships. We learn from what we're taught or what we pick up. And very much of it is in the early stages. We pick up from our parents. Any of the guys that I know and have worked with that have been a child of an alcoholic, you could say it hasn't affected you, bro, but it absolutely has to. It affects you just as much as if you were smothered in love. That's going to affect you also. If you're around an alcoholic family member and you're seeing, feeling, sensing, experiencing those interactions, it's going to have a profound effect. And whether you bury it or don't acknowledge it or don't even think you're feeling or you know, living it, it's there. It's absolutely there. So, you know, for me, because I did live it, and I do feel like I, you know, rose above it, and I made peace with my dad and with the rest of my family while standing my ground, while speaking my truth, while creating healthy boundaries. And then it was up to them. Okay, how are you going to, you know, respond to this? Or are you going to keep reacting and giving me shit? Well, okay, that's fine. You stay on your side of the line I've drawn, and I'll live my life and be happy, you know? So I think it's really important for anybody who, even if they don't think they're addicted, that grew up in a situation like that, take a look at the other issues that you're having in your life. And of course, we all have issues in our life, you know, things, I'll say things that are unbalanced and things that maybe don't make us so happy or affect our relationships. Take a look at those things and then maybe go back, look at those behaviors and go back to like what you experienced when you were in that family situation growing up with that alcoholic or whatever the addiction was. And I guarantee you there's going to be similarities there. There's going to be triggers there. There's going to be things that you will be able to relate to. And that's, you know, that's a starting point. You know, again, the acknowledgement that there is an issue here and that maybe I need to do some work is the jumping off point. That's the first step, and that's really essential, you know, to be vulnerable and allow yourself to have that to move forward.
Well, at least the awareness that it's an intergenerational experience, that it is affecting generations well beyond, you know, the one that you know, because we keep passing things along to be healed. And what we don't heal, we project onto our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, the responsibility to heal. And so I think it's necessary for each individual to take personal responsibility for their addictions. And again, we all have them. We all have various addictions. You know, I think for the longest time, I'd say up until I was 40, work was definitely an addiction. It was my escape it was both my escape and my healing. It was an escape from the pain in my world, but I, at a certain point, delved into a type of work that would also face the inner work to do that healing, which is how I ended up with 1111 and a lot of the spiritual work that I do. As far as now, the addiction, I would say the addiction now is more of an addiction of self-sufficiency. And that's the curious thing about addictions. I think they can show up in so many deceptive ways and in so many interesting ways that we bamboozle ourselves into thinking we don't have one. And I am a overly self-sufficient or overly committed person to things, or, you know, we can go to that spectrum as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, or overly serious at times. So I think that those are some of my more subtle addictions. And you said you didn't have any. Do you want to rethink that?
Mm-hmm. I like the way you segued right out of that. Okay. Are you complete?
I believe I am.
I'm not going to push. I'm joking, but it really is. That is part of the process when I work with the guys. It's, you know, stay in it as long as you need to stay in it. You know, it's uncomfortable. Yes, it's like, you know, one of the physical challenges, which really is a spiritual awakening, if you will, and a spiritual challenge also, because most guys have not experienced it, is the Inipi, Native American Inipi ceremony, what is more commonly known as a sweat lodge. And my Native American friends have shared with me, they don't call it that anymore. They'll call it a reclamation ceremony, or really it's the traditional terminology is Inipi ceremony. So going into something like that has been really powerful for a lot of the guys, because physically it does open you up. When you're experiencing that discomfort, it's not even so much that you're experiencing the physical discomfort, which, yes, okay, in the real world you are. But if you're open to looking at, it's bringing something up and out in you that you more than likely are not allowing yourself or ready to look at. And you need to pray harder, bro. And whatever your belief system is, whatever, pray harder that you don't feel so hot. Pray harder that, you know, whatever it is in you comes out. Pray harder that, you know, you get some epiphany and you're able to move through this crap. Whatever it is, you know, start praying a little harder. Get out of your own head and be open to, you know, you're here. You're here. You're doing this work. You're up for the challenge. So get into it. It's not, and that's not just about like, hey, how hot can I take it? Hey, man, put more water on the stones, make it hotter. It's about looking deep within. It's about accepting what's coming up and doing your best to understand that and working with it and praying to whoever that is that you, you know, consider your higher power or, you know, whatever you relate to with that, like, hey, you know what? I'm here. I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to be vulnerable. I'm willing to sit here naked, exposed, and I feel the support of Mother Earth under me. I feel the support of my brothers around me, and I'm here. I'm going to let it all out, and I'm going to allow whatever this is that's been holding me back, that's been my sugar, that's been playing with my head and screwing up my relationships. I'm going to look at it, and I'm going to deal with it, and I'm going to work on it from here, you know, and that's powerful stuff. It really is powerful stuff. So
it takes courage. It takes courage to do that type of work and to really face yourself and to be radically honest with the self, because it's so easy, I think, to escape, to point the finger, to avoid. There's so many distractions in the world, and there's so many easy ways to just say, I'll take, you know, door number two or three instead. And so it does, it takes a discipline and a courage and a desire to really want to anchor into the highest self possible to be able to shift out of those addictions and patterns.
Yeah. You used the word awareness before, which is really, it really is so key. If we're seeing awareness, and once we are aware, so what do you do with that? You know, it's just being aware is one thing. Being proactive, and now having this insight, this information, maybe it's knowledge, maybe it's wisdom at some point. What do you do with it? You know, do you just say, oh, okay, well, this is what I've discovered about myself? Or do you say, okay, this is what I discovered about myself. It's not working for me. It hasn't worked for me. It's apparently not working for the people around me. How do I move in a different direction and make this better for myself and make this better for all the people I'm in relationship with? And then, you know, then you could start stepping in a different direction and start making the positive, affirmative changes in your life that you know, that do serve you and do serve what it is that you want and need in your life. And the constant we could always depend on is change, you know? So I always say, like, change is inevitable and growth is optional. So, and once you have that awareness, to me, how do you not grow? How do you not choose the path of growing? That's the only way to get out of it is to go through it and move above it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's we can't just use the platitudes of being divine or higher self or being infinite if we are not willing to find that space within ourselves beyond the intellectual mind or a concept. It's necessary to understand that patterns, behaviors, addictions are the illusion and the maya of the lower self. They are the false self acting out. This is the ego figuring out a way to expound upon the pain of its own story that it created. And all of these transcendences are what lead to the higher self, lead to the experience of moving beyond sugar and becoming the sweetness that we are, to discover that we are ultimately what we are to imbibe, what we are to experience and to express in our highest forms. And in a sense, that is the real intoxication that is to come about. So these other avenues and methods and substances that individuals engage in, it really is the lower self's attempt to reach for something they innately know exists, but they don't know how to get to. And the addiction really only takes them further away, creating more veils, creating more layers to go through, when ultimately, whether it's alcohol or sex or ambition or money or success, all those things are really the grasp for knowing the true self.
Well, yeah, knowing the true self, that self-mastery is, it's written on the Temple of Delphi, you know thyself. That's the biggest challenge I think we all face, and it's maybe the hardest work we can do. If you've worked with somebody or somebodies that have experienced like true awareness and growth and move from a place of being blocked and stuck, and then they develop practices and they're practicing those practices and they're moving above and out of the muck and mire, and then they wind up inevitably taking steps backwards and winding up in the same place, and then you talk to them, they know exactly what happened and they know what they need to do to get back to that place because they've done it for a long time even, but they just don't seem to be able to move forward, and they don't seem to have that will and desire anymore to do it. Have you experienced that before with anybody that you work with, and what kind of support would you give?
You know, I think that we all hit those areas where, I don't know whether some might term it stuckness, some might term it stagnancy, or simply the place where they just have to surrender to. We can will our growth as much as we want. We can continue to do the work. And yet there's a certain part of it that is an organic flowering as well. We know when we know. We grow when we grow. It's got to also be organic, just like plants. And I think that when we slip back into a place that we've been before, there has to be some sort of intelligence there as well, as if we've gone back to pick up something that we didn't realize we left there. And so rather than try to escape where we are, I've always believed it's best to sink further into where we are. Because when we sink into exactly where we are, no matter how beautiful or painful, then we grab hold of the richness that is there for us. And we've made full use of the moment, plus we've been used well. And ultimately, I think that that's why we incarnate as human beings. We're here to be used well for the sake of our souls, becoming aware, of what the physical experience is. And for us as human beings to truly realize an embodiment of true self, of infinite self, which we all have, but we've hidden it from ourselves to such a degree that unless we go back and pick up those pieces and parts along the way, even if that means being sat back down in a spot that we were before, that we just have to trust that that has purpose.
I agree with everything you're saying. And I like the analogy you're using with the plants. So I'm asking, like, what's the fertilizer? Because that's all very true and wonderful and good. But when you're in that space of being the stuck or the blocked,
I think the pain is the fertilizer. I think when it hurts bad enough, people move. So for someone to slip back into a place, they've gone back into a place that was comfortable. It was comfortable for the pattern, for the behavior, for the psyche, for the emotional level that they didn't want to exceed. But even at some point, that is going to get so uncomfortable or hurt bad enough that the individual will be catapulted out of it. And I think that's the organic quality of life. Is life understands what we need to be able to move. And it's not going to control our experience for us, but it will support and facilitate what is required if we do get stuck for too long.
I think from like the male perspective, like when I work with these guys, when I do hear and of course sense and experience that they are, you know, in that place of just not moving anywhere, and certainly not doing the work that they know and that they've shown that works for them. And they've given me really the go ahead. That's part of our contract, if you will. Like, hey, Wask, if you see, you know, I need some prodding, I give you full carte blanche to prod me. The fertilizer, which is one of the best fertilizers there is, you know, is manure, man, is shit. Excuse my French. You know, I'll give him shit when that I really feel strongly, intuitively, and knowing the guy that's what he needs. That's the kind of prodding he needs, because I've seen it work so many times. The tender, loving care, in my experience, only goes so far with some of my bros. It's like, dude, you know, enough with a pity party. And I totally hear and respect what you're saying also. So maybe the manure that I serve them up is helping them get to that place, that lowest place, so they can move back further up. Because, you know, as a sentient being, you know, I don't want to see my brother suffer. Although I know, just like, you know, hey, you gotta have the strength to bust out of that chrysalis. You know, I do honor that they need to go through their process and go through the pain of to strengthen themselves to get out. I've just had the experience for so many years that how long you want me to wait and support you from the sidelines, bro? It's like, no, hey, if you know something, if you could help me out, and then I will push. I will do what I've experienced that works for them. And, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, I you know, I can't say other than, you know, the outcome of like 7 out of 10 times, it will at least push them in the direction to start moving where they need to go. Because I just know, even from my own journey, sometimes I'm in this place of like, wow, man, honestly, it's like, I don't know what to do. I remember experiencing that, like, knock on wood, I haven't experienced that in very, very, very long time. But like, I don't even know what to do. And I would have welcomed somebody to just, you know, prod me or, you know, support me in even if it's tough love or pushing me and fertilizing me.
I think it's a both and conversation. I think from the perspective of the individual, if they can't figure out what to do, then what they need to do is sit in where they are, because their body will give them the sensations, the thoughts will come up, the emotions will rise. Those sensory aspects of us are what lift us up and out, if we're willing to be aware and pay attention to those parts of us. But if we have a facilitator, a coach, or someone that is supporting, that individual being able to be radically honest and bold is an act of unconditional love, while also holding the capability of the other person. Because I don't think we're here to pull someone out of where they are. I think we're here to shine a light on who they're being so that they can choose to step out of where they are. Mm-hmm. When an individual is ready, willing, and able, they are going to move. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how much we talk with or at a person, they're not going to hear us, especially if they're in the depths of their shadows. Individuals that are in their psychosis, in their shadows, in their patterns and behaviors, they're in such an unconscious state with themselves, they really can't hear anything but their own story and construct that they've created. So it does almost have to be a request from the individual. Yeah. Wow, great show, Waska. It looks like we're winding up. And
we be winding.
That was a great, great topic around the addictions and the sugar and the patterns and the behaviors. Why don't you tell people how they can work with you?
Wonderful show, wonderful topic, wonderful conversation. So for me to help my brothers, because that's what I'm here for, to serve, to support my bros, illuminatedwarrior.com. You know, we have our monthly telecircle, which has been really supportive and wonderful for a lot of the guys. So you could check that out on the website. Also going to be planning some retreats soon down in the Asheville area, which I'm very much looking forward to. So yeah, reach out, connect. You know, I'm here for any of my brothers. Thank you, Simran. If you want to share a little bit your information, please do so.
Feel free to connect with all of my free resources at 1111mag.com. That's 1111mag.com. as well as 1111 Talk Radio's weekly radio show. So awesome having a conversation with you today, Waska.
Visit IlluminatedWarrior.com if you'd like to go deeper and find out more about what's available within the Illuminated Warrior Men's Transformational Community. Tune in next time for more candid conversations for men and women about men on the Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Until next time, illuminate your path with loving kindness.